Ling Xing is your client right now.
Okay.
He's asking you, should I use CPF for my monthly payment? How would you advise him?
It's a decision between liquidity. If you want more flexibility for cash, you want to, start a new company.
Outside of endowments.
Outside of endowments.
Side hustle.
Hey, don't get me in trouble, bro.
Yeah, getting us into trouble.
Your girlfriend might not be listening, but your boss is.
Yeah, but that's a real concern, right? So if you have...
Hello and welcome to another episode of Chill with TFC. I'm your host, Andrew. Have you ever wondered if licensed financial advisors and experts take their own financial advice? To answer this question, we're chilling with Xing Shi and Ling Xing, the personal finance lead and client experience lead at Endawas, one of Singapore's leading investment platforms, to find out how they use their own CPF for their BTOs and where they stand on the never-ending debate of cash versus CPF in terms of housing. There's some standard advice out there, but how do you take note of the nuances and apply it to your own situation? Today, we're going to hear concrete and personal examples from Xing Shi and Ling Xing on Chill with TFC.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We have Endawas with us again. We have Ling Xing and Xing Shi. Well, introduce yourself so that we get to recognize your voice. Let's start with you first.
Yeah, hi, I'm Xing Shi, the personal finance lead of Endawas. I'm in my early 30s this year. In terms of my relationship status, you can say that, I've approached my girlfriend with the question of you want to BTO already, right? So can't call her a fiance yet, but I'm at that stage of my life. So looking at BTOs, resale flats. Yeah, so a lot of my sharing will be from that lens of someone who is looking at my first property. Mm,
there's a reason for that background information, not TMI. It's because we're going to talk about CPF for housing. So it really depends on which stage of life are you at.
Exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
How about Lin Xing?
Hi, I'm Lin Xing. I'm the client experience lead. So my day-to-day job involves helping people navigate the platform, provide investment advisory. So I'm what you consider a financial advisor. I mean, I'm sure Xing Shi will share a bit more about that, about what he does in a while. But yeah, so that's what I do on a day-to-day basis, helping clients navigate their platform, understand our value proposition. If there are any queries from our listeners or watchers, the person that you interface will be me. In some sense, I'm the face of the firm.
This is not the first time Endawas is on the show, as I've mentioned before. And as we're discussing about today's episode, what to talk about, right? And we want to really talk about CPF, because that's one of the things that, you think about when you look at Endawas advertisements is all around everywhere. Mm. And one of the things, that takes up your, mind space is CPF. But particularly, we want to talk about using CPF for housing. Because talk about CPF, so many things to talk about. Let's focus on one thing. Let's really go in depth into it. And I want to talk about using CPF for housing, right? So what was your experience, either personal experience or from the stats from your client database or from your own experience with dealing with clients? What are they looking out for? What should we think about when we talk about CPF for housing?
Maybe let's take a step back and first come to an understanding of what CPF is, right? Mm. So CPF is a national savings scheme that's compulsory for all Singaporeans and PR. And then some of the key purposes that it serves is housing, which we are talking about today, retirement, and also medical purposes, right? So, and then, of course, all the complexity around CPF, MediSave, CPF retirement account, special account all comes in. I think some of the key facts or data that we need to be very aware about CPF, right, is firstly, you get a fairly good interest with CPF. For OA, you get 2.5% and possibly an additional 1% interest from it. There's other uses for CPF OA. So you don't really need to just put it for housing purposes, right? You can use it for investments. You can use it for like an OA to SA transfer. You can do it. You use it to pay for your siblings' education, right? So there are other opportunity costs for CPF. And then, of course, another factor is that the government thinks of you using your CPF OA for housing as a way of borrowing from your retirement, right? And then that's where all the voluntary housing refund, the need to pay back your CPF with accrued interest comes about. Yeah, so those are some of the things that we need to take into consideration before we go into the meat of today's discussion.
Mm, Lindsay, anything to add on to that?
Maybe from my point of view, interestingly, I actually just applied for a BTO. So I have some insight, I guess, but I would echo a lot of what Xingqi said. I mean, there is some people would, you know, like would state that, you know, like CPF is not necessarily my money, and there'll be a segment of individuals for right, for wrong, you know, they think that way. But I think my encouragement for our listeners and whoever is watching is to really think that actually CPF is your money, right? It is a very comprehensive social security system, at times complex and difficult to understand. And today we hopefully can help our listeners unpack some of this nitty-gritty, especially from a housing perspective, that actually this complexity, there is a purpose for it, right? There is a desire, in my opinion, right? I'm not trying to be a government spokesman or anything, but there is a desire to cater to as wide as possible of a Singapore demographic, right? As wide as possible. So because of this desire to cater for as wide as possible of a demographic, hence it comes with various complexities and intricacies within a system, which we'll touch a bit more in the next couple of minutes. Yeah.
So we've had several episodes, right? You can actually Google search for, you know, CPF on the TFC channel. You can listen to all of the previous episodes. But today, let's do a recap. Let's start from basics. And let's start from using grants. You know, like, I mean, the first thing on a you just BTO, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so what grants did you apply for? Did you get them? Yeah, and how much was it?
Right, so I won't disclose how much I got because I don't know yet, right? It's still in the process of application. Mm-hmm. But I think to help our listeners understand what are the grants available, and there are a lot, right? What would be helpful is to categorize them into application for BTO and application for resale flats, mm-hmm. right? Let's start with BTO, right? If you are an eligible first-time applicant, I know that sounds like a very loaded word, right? Eligible first-time applicants.
Essentially, makes me eligible, yeah.
What makes eligibility essentially is if you're a first-time applicant, both boyfriend, girlfriend, or fiancé, fiancée, both are first-time applicants, you will be eligible for a grant up to $80,000 depending on your monthly income, right? Your monthly income, combined monthly income shouldn't breach $9,000. So depending on what is your combined income, assuming that it doesn't breach $9,000, you will be eligible for a grant of up to $80,000. Of course, if you have a bit more income, then the grant that you are eligible becomes less. But there is a comprehensive table that's found on the web CPF website, which you can refer to. But so just a quick recap, BTO, if it's your first time, up to $80,000 in grant, as long as your monthly income doesn't breach $9,000. Now, for resale, right, similarly, the term that is often being used is eligible first-time applicants. Very simply, to put it simply, it's just you are a first-time applicant, but this time you are looking to buy a resale instead of a BTO. Now, the main difference, perhaps for our listeners, is that if you're buying a resale, in addition to the same grant, which is called the Enhanced Housing Grant that you get for BTO, there are two additional grants that you can get. One is the Proximity Grant. Basically, it means that if you live with your family, you get an additional $30,000, right? If you live with parents, let me clarify. If you live with your parents, you get an additional $30,000. If you live within 4 kilometers of your family, right, or your parents, you get $28,000. So this is the first additional grant, Proximity Grant. The other grant that you can potentially look at for resale is what they call the CPF Housing Grant for resale flats. Again, depending on the type of flat you're looking, potentially up to $50,000 of additional grants. So I would encourage the listeners to, you know, to think about first and foremost, if you're looking for BTO, this is the available grants up to $80,000. For resale, you got two other additional grants that you can look forward to, which is the Proximity Grant and the CPF Housing Grant for resale. Hopefully that sort of helps clarify any mystery to what the grants are. There are grants, so I encourage the listeners to really look into it and use that knowledge to plan for your finances as well as you to what kind of house you like to buy and so on and so forth.
Do you know if there are grants for singles? I mean,
yes.
Right, you know, you mentioned proximity to parents and you BTO yourself, so it's more for as a couple, right?
Exactly.
What about if a single, 35 years old, looking for a resale?
Absolutely. So actually, there are grants as well for BTO, for singles, as well as for resale. So for BTOs, for eligible first-time applicants, right, you are able to get a grant of up to $40,000 if memory serves you right, as long as your income doesn't breach $4,500 on a monthly basis. Similarly, for resale flats as well, the very similar grants for that as well. So yes, singles, the government is also thinking of you. So it's not to say that there isn't, so there are. Yeah, but obviously we won't be able to go into all the details today, but there are. So I would encourage listeners to just really look to it and you'll find something that should be suitable for you. Yeah. Okay.
So we're talking about grants because, right, property is a huge capital outlay. Mm. So we want to see how we fill up the gap, right? So grants fill up part of the gap and then the rest will be like through loans, right? And then of course, after that, your own whatever savings that you have, right? So in terms of loans, what can you share with us? What kind of loans can we get?
So there are two different types of loans that Singaporeans can get. One is the HDB loan. And then the other would be the bank loans.
Mm. Does it make a difference whether it's a private property, you know, HDB? Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, for sure. So of course, if it's the HDB loan, you can only get when you apply for a BTO or a resale flat. But for like private property, then you pretty much have to rely on bank loans.
Okay. Yeah. And with rising interest rates, right, as the macro, you know, economic environment in the background. Mm. So what should we think about the loans and the interest rates that we're getting?
Yeah, exactly. I think this is something that we recently wrote about. So if you were to search something on like HDB with rising interest rate, what should you do with
and
a mortgage?
Fixed or floating.
Right? Yeah, then you'll probably get hit by an article written by me actually. So this is something that I'm actually looking at quite actively. So I think in about a month back or just 2 weeks ago, UOB just announced that they have increased their fixed interest loan to around 3%, if I'm not wrong, right? Fixed interest loans are getting expensive for the banks to go and commit to. And the HDB loan is actually a great deal, right? Because what you are essentially getting is the OA rate plus 0.1%. So currently it's at 2.6% fixed. Mm. So it's a great deal for people who are looking, listeners who are looking at getting a resale flat or a BTO to commit to a...
Looking for private property, then you have no choice but to go with the bank loan, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then bank loan is the same thing, fixed and floating. How do you see that?
You know, I'm sure all of us know that there isn't really a free lunch, right? It's just trying to getting a fixed interest rate fixed, or you know, committing to a floating rate, but it may fluctuate greatly, right? So, I would say that it's really up to your risk appetite, right? And the risk appetite of your partner, definitely. Are you more willing to take up a loan where you know the rates may change? Or are you more comfortable with at least the first one to 3 years having a fixed rate, right? But eventually, you have to go and take up a loan where the interest rate will have to vary, right? Because after the first 3 years, anything goes with the interest rates.
Okay, so let's go into your personal experiences. Mm. Right? So Lansing BTO recently. Mm. And then what else for Sheng Shi is you proposed with a BTO recently. Can I say that?
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay. So like different, kind of slightly different stage in this process, right? So what's your consideration? Maybe Lansing, like you just done it. So what is your consideration before? What's the process you're at right now? And then what's next to look at?
I think it's a great question. I think a lot to cover. I think from my own personal experience, first consideration is, I mean, on just the quick topic of whether a bank or HDB loan. Now, if one chooses a bank loan, to go with a bank loan to buy a HDB, right? It's, if I'm not wrong, you won't be able to choose a HDB loan thereafter, right? So it's a one-way street, right? But if you choose a HDB loan and thereafter decide to move to a bank loan, you are able to do that. So I hope the listeners, in part of your consideration of whether to choose to begin with a bank loan or a HDB loan for your HDB purchase, to take that into consideration.
Very quick tip. Yeah. So what you do when you apply for your BTO, always say that you're going to take up a HDB loan first.
Which is what I did.
Yeah, which is what I did as well.
So that's a huge tip. So that if... Now, why is this important right now is I think at my point of application, I was deliberating between two loans. And after speaking to some mortgage specialists, at that point of time, some of the bank loans were actually just cheaper, basically, right, than the HDB loan. However, I was very cognizant about the fact that interest rates are going to hike. And if I do begin with a bank loan, and obviously you need to remortgage your loan after every couple of years, if interest rates do continue to hike, and at the point of repricing, it's actually more expensive than HDB, there is no chance for me to actually make a reversal in decision making. So my experience is it's worth considering at this current interest rate climate, be very sure of what you're getting yourself into. And default will be start with a HDB, unless there is a very compelling reason to take a bank loan. So in addition to deciding between HDB and bank loan, the other consideration that for me was to basically choose a BTO or apply for a flat who's basically something I can afford, lah, right? So this is an advice regardless of what the interest rate environment is in, right? Choose a flat that you can afford. And one way by doing that is obviously look at your current circumstances, not just look at how much loan you can max out, right? So I do know of clients who actually just say, oh, based on my monthly income, I can max out my loan, right? And I think, maybe not a lot, but perhaps some of our listeners from your decision-making process, that's the first parameter by which to help you make a decision is to max the loan amount, right? But perhaps another way to think about it, and which was mine, was to think about, oh, I have elderly parents, you know, like perhaps I would like to consider not taking up such a large loan such that I have more to take care of my parents, for example, or for my retirement, right? I don't want to take up a large enough loan that will impinge on my own, like planning for retirement. So beyond just maxing out your loan such that to buy a bigger flat, right? We all think bigger is better. Always do consider your other financial circumstances, retirement, housing.
as well as healthcare, right? So personally, you know, I do have an underlying health condition. So that's something I also need to be aware of, right? That I need to plan for that as well, from just paying for medical checkups and so on and so forth. So I hope our listeners also factor that into other life circumstances as they make a decision on what kind of flat to buy and so on and so forth.
How do you discuss this with your partner though? Like, what's her take on it?
Wow. This is a trick question. Yeah, I think...
Is she listening?
She will.
She will.
She's on board. I think, great point, because I think buying a house is not a single person's decision.
Yeah.
It's always a joint discussion. And I think we had this conversation. It's always to involve your girlfriend, boyfriend, spouse in this conversation, right? Mm. Especially if you're planning to get married. A good way to start your marriage, right? Especially with such a big purchase. So we definitely agreed on the decision. It was a joint decision. It might seem like it was only my decision from the conversation, but it was definitely a joint decision that we had all these other considerations before deciding to apply for the flat that we applied, lah.
Yeah, because yeah. I like a point about, you know, considering all aspects of your life, because yeah. it's so hard to answer the question of like, make sure it's affordable. Okay,
yeah,
how,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's all very qualitative, but you mentioned like, okay, you've got parents, you know, and whether you have an underlying health condition. Do you like use an Excel sheet? Like, what's your thought process? How do you really pin down to affordability that this is, you know, within your means?
Yeah, so I think everyone has various ways by which to decide. I think a helpful rule of thumb, which Ching Shi, personal finance lead, shared with me, is the 3-3-5 rule. I think it's on CPF. Is it on the CPF website?
Yeah, it started off by one of the property bloggers.
Yeah.
And then CPF thought that it's a good idea to sort of make it catchy and also easily understood.
Right. What was that? 3-3-5?
Right. So it's actually quite a simple rule of thumb. So the first three is your initial capital that you need to be at least 30% of the property's asking price. An example, let's say if your BTO is $500,000, for example, you and your partner should have at least about $150,000in CPF, right, to make the down payment, right? So this is a rule of affordability. The second three is your monthly loan repayment, which you can actually compute on the CPF side, should not exceed 1/3 of your monthly salary. So I think this is quite well known amongst people, right? Then the third is the five, the purchase price of your new home should not exceed more than 5 times of your annual income. Right. So, for example, let's say if you're looking to buy 500,000, right? So it means that the combined income should be about 100,000 or 50,000 each for you and your spouse. So that's just the 3-3-5 rule. Hopefully that gives our listeners an idea of how to compute affordability.
Yeah, something to think about. Ching Shi, what's your take on affordability?
Yeah. So exactly as what Lin Xing said, right? We all of us have different circumstances. There's different financial goals as well. Across different individuals, we have different like capacity to want to tax our finances, right? So one of the conversations, you know, all of us definitely went through that thought process of like getting a private property, you know, staying in a condo where you have all the nice amenities, swimming pool, gym, you know, everything within that premises. And it's a lifestyle, right? It's a lifestyle that many people look forward to, lah, be it currently or maybe, you know, sometime later in their career when they're in their 40s or so on. So when I had that conversation with my girlfriend, it's really straightforward. I think when you look at a property investment of, let's say, a $500,000 BTO, for example, right? And if you were to go and have another property investment, right? A condo investment of $1.5 million, for example, right? The amount that you pay in terms of your monthly mortgages essentially tripled. If you were to assume the same amount of down payment, same amount of loans that you're taking, right? So it's really taxing when you look at it from that perspective, right? On one end, you are just paying, between the two person, you're paying maybe $1,000+ every month, while the other end, you're essentially paying $3,000-$4,000 and you will need to put in a cash amount as well. So I think the conversation for us, you know, when we put it that way, it's no longer so much about, oh, I want a swimming pool access, I want the gym access. So it's when you make the example between paying triple on a monthly basis, then it's not so much about, oh, what's a nice to have, right? But it's really what you can afford and what you feel more comfortable being able to pay on a monthly basis.
Mm-hmm. Ching Shi prefaced it with when I discussed with my girlfriend, so I cannot throw in the trick question. He's prepared for it already. Yeah, they discussed together and this is what I come up with. But both of you decide to BTO and not go for private property. Any reasons for that?
Because why not? It's why, I mean, really, BTO is very affordably priced. Mm-hmm. You know, we get a new property. Yeah, I think definitely for me, a BTO is the first choice. And probably because I have not tried so many times. So I'm on my third trial already. Yeah, so definitely going for a BTO first. Okay. Yeah.
I think for me, it's just living within my means, right? And where I am right now, where me and my wife is, I think the BTO makes the most sense financially. It will not impinge on other life aspirations that we have, like wanting to retire at a certain age, then taking care of elderly parents, my health condition, and so on and so forth. So, you know, it's back to the earlier point about considering everything. Maybe some people will say that maybe me and Shengxi think too much. Maybe because we're part of the industry, we do want to think and plan for ourselves and not, you know, just overstretch ourselves. Like, I mean, I've heard horror stories about friends taking loans that just because they earn a high income right now, but then, you know, they lost their jobs or whatever it is, then they won't be able to afford. And so that's basically my consideration, affordability, from my understanding of what that means.
Okay, so digging further on the whole using cash or CPF, right? And in terms of your down payment, in terms of your monthly payment that you're going to be paying next over several years. So what's your take? This is an eternal debate.
Yes,
cash
yes,
or CPF, yeah. Right? Like, yes. Personal take.
For me, just disclosure, I'm a bit older than perhaps the both of you. I'm almost 40, right? So I have been quite blessed to amass a bit of CPF funds. So that would help to fund towards my down payment for my BTO. So thankfully, I don't have to fork out cash. So my spare cash is just channeled to planning for my retirement. So that's how I have done it for myself. But everyone's going to be different.
Yeah. I think that background makes a bit of difference because you use your CPF funds the down payment, right? Yeah. And in subsequently, for a monthly payment, you're going to use 100% CPF? Or
I haven't decided.
You haven't decided?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So that's the background. How about you?
Yeah. And I guess maybe just to add on to Lin Xing's point on haven't decided, right? Mm. I think whether it's cash or CPF, it's ultimately your hard-earned money, right? It's part of your compensation, you're part of your bonus, it's your money, right? Eventually, you'll be able to get access to it at the age of 55.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Right. So it's important to be very cognizant of that. And I think for many of us, especially the younger audience here, is that using cash or CPF is not a matter of, you may not have the luxury of choice, right? You just started work, you know, you have education loans to pay off, you know, you are pretty much forced to use CPF to pay for your down payment. And at the early stage of your life, maybe a more extended period if you have children, you also want to use CPF to pay for your mortgage because, you know, cash you need to pay for your kids' medical costs, nursery, et cetera, right? So I think definitely consider using CPF more at an earlier stage of life because of cash flow consideration, even though that 2.5% may be very alluring. Mm-hmm. And then at a later stage of life, you can consider using more cash to go and pay for your mortgages because you have more salary, you know, primary school education is definitely not as much as kindergarten or whatnot, right? So with that spare cash, consider using cash for your mortgage. I think that's the way to look at it.
So that's from the cash flow point of view. Your current down payment, are you planning to use, is there a percentage, 100%, or, you know, how much you're going to use CPF for a down payment?
I would like to think that I'm a bit more savvy with managing my money. So right.
You can beat 2.5. Easily.
with good emotion management. I mean, the markets are really, really very volatile nowadays. There's a lot of uncertainty these past few months. So I would say that, like, I would still want to maintain more flexibility for myself and to use CPF for my down payment and mortgage as much as possible. But then again, I also see friends who, you know, they use CPF for everything. And then they basically live a YOLO life, right? Because, I've gotten a raise, I've gotten nice bonuses, I'm going to go to Europe for holiday for two or three times a year, I'm going to get a new car and whatnot, right? You know, on one end, their CPF is depleted for their condo or their resale flat. And on the other end, they are not really saving up for retirement, right? So this is where I think it gets a bit more tricky. And it's I feel nervous for them because they are not really planning for their retirement, even though maybe they have that property in place, lah.
Yep. Okay. So how would you advise Lin Xing who hasn't decided whether to use, you know, CPF for his monthly mortgage? You know, put on your role and tell us, you know, Lin Xing is your client right now.
Okay.
He's asking you, should I use CPF for my monthly payment? How would you advise him?
It's a decision between liquidity, lah. If you prefer to have more flexibility for cash, you want to, I don't know, start a new company. Start a new company, you know.
Outside of Endowus.
Yeah. Outside of Endowus.
Side hustle.
Hey, don't get me in trouble, bro.
Yeah, getting us into trouble.
Your girlfriend might not be listening, but your boss is.
Yeah, but that's a real concern, right? So if you have bigger goals for your cash, then definitely, you know, use CPF for your housing. But if not, you know, we may complain about the paternalistic system that we have. But it's a great way for us to like look at our cash flow structure and set aside retirement funds for ourselves. Then if you feel that you lack that discipline for yourself, then go ahead and use CPF. Okay. Keep more of CPF.
So yeah. I hear two things. One is you mentioned cash flow. And the second thing is the opportunity cost of cash.
Exactly.
So if you think and channel it to an investment that gives you greater returns than 2.5%, then you want to use that for your investments, then use more CPF, right? You know, to pay for your monthly mortgage.
But I think a very important point is that, you know, for us, we realize that, you know, when it comes to CPF monies, there is an opportunity cost, right? 2.5%. And like investing CPF, in our opinion, it's really wrong that you don't have as low cost an option, as convenient as option as cash, right? That's why I think our founders, you know, started Endowus. And the very first thing that they really want to solve and work on is CPF investing, right? Mm. So we really brought down the cost of CPF investment. You can now buy index funds on CPF at really low cost. I think it's below 40 basis points, below 0.4%. And we are going to see lower cost options moving forward. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To make it clearer, right? Maybe can we explain this part about CPF accrued interest and that you have to return it after you sell your property. Like, give me a bit more details about that.
So I think this also applies to the grant that Lin Sing talked about,
yeah,
right? So
it's not the grants, yeah.
Exactly. So it's not just the down payment that you are using your CPF to pay. It's not just the grant that you're taking from the government, right? The mortgage that you are also paying on the monthly basis, those will incur accrued interest. The concept of accrued interest, I think, taking a step back again to what I talked about initially, right, is that the government sees that, you know, any money used for housing is essentially borrowing from our own retirement. So what happens is that, you know, because we are taking away some of the money that's meant for retirement, we need to pay it back with interest, right? That's where the concept of accrued interest comes in. Yeah. And it can be a very big number after a very long period.
2.5% after 20-30 years, it could be a huge amount.
Exactly. Yeah. I think we have a post on our Instagram, do check it out, about how much it compounds and grows, right? So let's say using that 500,000 resale flat example or BTO example that Lin Sing brought up, if we were to use 20% CPF as down payment, right, that's $100,000. $100,000 compounded at 2.5% across 25 years is $185,000. Right, it's almost like a full retirement sum amount of money, right? Mm-hmm. And which covers your baseline retirement amount. So huge amount of money. You know, you need to have a strategy around it or to at least be able to plan our retirement if we were to decide to commit to that amount of money.
Yeah, there could be a general idea that, you know, property is up only. And that, you know, when I sell, I should be able to cover. But we won't know, right? 20 years down the road, right? Know what the property market is like. Do you agree with that sentiment? You know,
I mean, I don't have the exact data, but the data that even like agents will share with you is that the returns from property in the past 10 years has not been the same in perhaps our parents' time, right? So the rate of return, return of investment has definitely not been the same. So to your point about that assumption, I think the assumption is being challenged, not just by us, but by the data provided, right? So, I mean, I want to touch a bit about the concept of returning money to CPF, right? Again, a lot of people think that it's a bad thing, right? Mm. But ultimately, these monies are for your retirement, right? To Shengxi's point, the CPF system is a social security system primarily for retirement, housing, and Medicare. So we need to remember that. And ultimately, the monies that are returned back is yours. But of course, a bit of planning today will go a long way in helping you for not just for your housing needs, but for your retirement needs as well. But yes, to the earlier question, property prices, I mean, the whole idea is land is scarce in Singapore. Property will always go up. But a key consideration is how much will it go up? And what is the opportunity cost for investing in a property as compared to, let's say, you are investing in equities or fixed income or whatever it is, right? So just take a cursory look at the data. Like, don't listen to us. Just go and Google the data. The data is very clear that it's not as compelling as what was in our parents' time. Yeah.
Yeah. And just to drive on the point that Lin Sing made, yeah, returning the CPF accrued interest to your own
exactly,
CPF.
Yeah, exactly.
Returning money back to yourself. Yep. And there's a reason for that because ultimately CPF is for retirement.
Exactly.
Just that, you know, the government is allowing you to use it for housing. But ultimately the main goal, right, that supersedes all other goals, correct me if I'm wrong, is retirement.
I don't know whether CPF is
that,
was
CPF.
I don't know whether they will say supersede, but it's a key consideration. It's a key consideration. And we need to really think about this is supposed to facilitate your retirement so that you can live easier in future.
Yeah. No point having a house and then you have no money to
exactly.
buy, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think to that point, you know, some of the older Singaporean folks, right, especially if they over invest in property, they face this problem of being asset rich, cash poor. And I do see some of these fellow Singaporeans around like this. They have a very nice landed property, but it's like, it sits on an expensive piece of land, right? But it has not been maintained. And you know, they are obviously facing cash flow issues. So you know, while we invest in property, it's also important to note that like if the entire Singapore market, property market goes up, for you to sell and monetize your property, right, you need to buy another property. So it's that problem. You may not really necessarily be planning for retirement just by investing in primary residential property.
Right. Yeah. Ultimately, you need a place to stay.
Exactly.
And we talk about, you know, looking at the data, you know, the returns might not be as good as our parents' time.
Yeah.
And we also mentioned several times in our podcast that, you know, like ultimately you should think of it as a place to stay and not an investment. But somehow, you know, at the back of the mind, we hope to sell it at a good price, right?
For sure. I mean, I think all of us want it, right?
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Is that part of a consideration when you BTO? Like hopefully, you know, this place, good amenities, good location, and then like appreciate in value.
We would lie if that's not part of the consideration, mm-hmm. right? But I think financial planning is always a holistic exercise. You need to consider a variety of factors, right? I think Shinshi brought out a good point, is about you need to consider that where you stay is not going to necessarily be the main means by which you retire on. So that's important consider, because you need to monetize your property if you want to use it for retirement purposes. Hopefully the listeners can understand that that's where we're coming from.
So for me, I never really thought of selling my property for a big profit, because end of the day, someone else is buying, right? And then there will be a cost to them, right? It will be a societal problem if people of our generation make huge profit from property. Yeah. And then, you know, we really see that, like, honestly speaking, like fresh grads, their salary has not been like increasing as much as like some of the costs that we see, we experienced nowadays, right? So I definitely don't want to make a huge return on property. To me, it's like, oh, I buy this property, it's really just for me to stay. You know, if I can pass it down,
great. Oh, very if objective. Not, very,
yeah, if
you
not,
know,
yeah.
Wow, you know, respect. No, because we're thinking about our children and our grandchildren, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Things just go up only, you know. It's not good for them as well.
Yeah, and the conversations that I have with my friend is like, objectively speaking, do you prefer to buy a more expensive property, or do you just want this place to stay? You know, and after a bit of thought, all of us just want an affordable place to stay for ourselves, right? That's more immediate. Mm, okay. And I guess to that point, it's really important that, you know, when you do that 3-3-5 exercise, right? When it comes to, you know, thinking about how much we want to pay on the monthly basis, how much we want to commit to that aspect of that very big decision for our property, for our housing, we also need to also set aside a sum of money for our retirement as well, especially if we intend to deplete our CPF for the house. So setting aside that, you know, $500, $1,000 for ourselves or for our partner for retirement in an investment goal, I think that's really critical.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Tell us a bit about voluntary housing refund.
So that is so maybe just some stats. Last year, actually, we surprisingly, I think for many of us, is that we have a record highs in number of people doing voluntary housing refund. CPF also shared that there is also a record amount of money being put back into CPF through voluntary housing refund. The way to look at voluntary housing refund is, we talk about the concept of accrued interest, borrowing money from your CPF, right? It's a balance that kind of grows as we withdraw that money for down payment. We have withdrawn some CPF monies for that mortgage. And also, it also incorporates the 2.5% interest into that calculation. So it's a balance that I would like to think of it as an option that we can use cash to put back into our CPF.
Why do you think there's such a trend? You know, more people are actually doing this voluntary housing refund. They see the importance of it, right? Well, but why? You know, is there more education? What do you think?
Definitely. I think from what we see, people are getting more woke about using CPF, right? The whole 1M65 movement, like people sharing a lot about CPF tips and hacks, like what we are doing here today.
Yeah.
I think people are interested and they are vested to know how to manage their CPF better. So I'm sure that's something that Lin Sing see on a day-to-day basis as well.
Absolutely. I think in my conversations with clients, definitely we more and more people are understanding the intricacies of the system. More and more people are trying to find out how best to use CPF, not just for housing, but also for retirement purposes, and find opportunities to invest their monies. Just because there's better education, there's better information out there. I think we are in an information age, right? The past 5 years, just explosion of information. And I think, again,
I think to do during COVID also.
Well, I was going to say that, yeah, kudos to them. There's a lot more information and it's good, right? More and more people are being aware. The clients that come to us, they are asking really good questions of how best to use CPF for a variety of reasons. What happens at age 55? What happens when car annuity plan they can get and so on and so forth. So we are getting really, really, not just surface level questions, but deep questions.
More
new ones, exactly. And how does it make a difference to our lives and so on and so forth. So yeah. So it's for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how do you do a voluntary housing refund? You go to CPF website and then you just transfer money from a bank account into the CPF. There's no limit or, you know, you can just put in any amount, right?
Yeah.
So, is that roughly how it works?
That's a great thing with a lot of the CPF related hacks or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So there's no minimum denomination. There's no cost involved. There's no timing involved as well, right? You just do it as and when it's convenient for yourself. And you just basically, you know, just do a transfer from your bank account to your CPF account. It's pretty easy.
Mm. And the benefit of doing that is that, you know, you don't have to pay as much accrued interest to yourself at the end of a few years down the road, right?
Yeah. I think, when you use the word...
benefits are there?
Yeah. Exactly. When you use the word pay...
Yeah, that's why I want to...
It's a bit... negative nuances already.
Yeah. Returning the CPF amount, yeah.
Yeah, but I personally would prefer to think of it as an angle of I am actually earning an additional 2.5% interest relative to what I can get outside of CPF, right? And I'm being responsible when I'm considering that option, right? So that's one way to grow your CPF monies. But another thing that people should consider is that, there's this option to do your voluntary housing refund. There's actually another option where you can just do your retirement sum top up, right? You can basically just put in up to $8,000 into your CPF account and get not just that additional 4% interest, but you're still getting tax relief on top of it. Right. So don't see that balance as a hole that you need to fill up, right? Mm-hmm. It's actually an option.
Okay.
And if you were to consider your options in totality, right, maybe the retirement sum top up of 4% would be more sensible for yourself. Yeah.
Okay. So Lindsay mentioned that your clients are asking better questions, deeper questions. Since we're on the topic of housing, anything that comes to mind, something that they asked recently and you think is really good, you want to share it.
I think the question that most people ask is, should I use cash or CPF? Basically pay, right? Either money mortgage or a down payment.
Mm.
And I think the answer that we often remind them is, it really depends on your life circumstances. We always encourage them to share with us, in 10, 15 minutes, what are your exact circumstances to give us a better idea. And then we can walk you through what perhaps might be best for you. Again, there's no one size fits all. But that's the question that often people ask, cash or CPF? And the reason is obviously opportunity cost, right? If I don't use my cash, what can I do with my cash? If I don't use my CPF, what can I do with my CPF, right? So when they ask these questions, what you see is they are thinking of two things in mind, right? Not just housing, but they're thinking of retirement, which is beautiful, right? Because that's exactly what we want Singaporeans to think about, right? You want to think about both, right? It's not a be all and all, right? CPF can do both, right? And so it's good that they are asking these questions. And, we are... I guess super, super honored that they come to us and trust us to ask these questions. We might not give them the direct answer, but hopefully in our sharing of information and how to use the CPF system, they are better equipped to make the best decision for themselves. Hopefully that sort of addresses what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Because this eternal debate.
No end. Because it's down to the individual. Maybe a shout out. Just come and talk to us, right? And then we'll help you walk you through with what's available in the information, factual information, and then hopefully it helps you figure out what's best for you and your family.
Mm, which is why I appreciate you too for coming on to share from a personal point of view. So for those of you listening, right? I mean, this is what they will do. This is what they have experienced, and from their own knowledge and from talking to clients, this is what their approach is. Because you literally just BTO, right? And that's why you're sharing from your own personal experience. But you got to think from your own personal point of view.
Absolutely.
And all circumstances.
Hashtag not financial advice.
Hashtag just not financial advice, yeah.
Thing about financial advice is that you got to be certified, right? So are you certified?
We are.
Both,
yeah.
So actually, you can give financial advice. I only do that because I'm not certified. So I hashtag not financial advice, but you two actually can, right?
We are licensed financial advisors.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think it's always important to qualify whatever we are saying, because end of the day, we don't know the listeners' circumstances.
Exactly.
Right. And that's why, do pick up the phone, give Lindsay a call.
Yeah. We'd be happy to connect and chat about anything related to CPF. There's great education, but I think more can be done. So for those who don't already know, reach out to us. We'll be happy to engage me and my team. We are here to serve you, yeah.
Okay, we've covered quite a lot. Anything else that we did not cover about using CPF for housing that you think, you want to let the audience know about?
I think the key takeaway for me is find out more. right? I mean, this talk is about financial literacy, right? So in some sense, there's so much information out there that in some sense, the power is in the hands of our listeners and watchers. You know, find out more. The ball is in your court. There's so much information. Like what you guys are doing, amazing. And private parties like us that is trying to also help in terms of elevating financial literacy. So engage us and find out more for yourself, right? All power to you guys, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I think for me, the key takeaway housing myself, right? I think the most important thing is definitely affordability, right? Just do whatever that not just satisfies your wants, but also makes sense for you financially now and maybe 4 or 5 years later. So affordability for housing to me is most important. Yeah.
Okay, all right. So give us any feedback. Tell us what you like about this episode. And if you like Xing Xi and Ling Xing to come on to talk about more about CPF, whether it's for investments or for, you know, healthcare or for retirement, any other aspects of CPF that you would like us to cover. All right, thank you.
Thank you too.
Thank you.
Thanks. Hey, I hope you've learned something useful today, and I truly appreciate that you took time off to better your life with the Financial Coconuts. Knowledge is that much more powerful and interesting when shared, debated, and discussed. Join our community Telegram group, follow us on our socials, sign up for our weekly newsletter. Everything is in the description. If you love us and want to help us grow, definitely share the podcast with your friends and on your socials. For more information, check out thefinancialcoconut.com. With that, have a great day ahead, stay tuned next week, and remember, personal finance can be chill, clear, and sustainable for all.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.